Blog Talk Radio.
I feel as geriatric as that music, and rightfully so. Perhaps I should gain that kind of respect too after all these years. Hello, everyone. Welcome to Masonic Effects. This is the place where Masons put their heads together temporarily, and we discuss things that are part of the fabric of Masonry, often unsaid in lodges, but always felt, always needed. Always necessary. Today, we have an especially interesting program for you, and because I'm we're going to be talking about the growth and life and decline of Masonry. And I say that in the kindest sense of the word, more likely the decline of the oak tree in my backyard. We're moving through different seasons. I, for one, think the essence of Masonry, the ideas, the values, and our principles are immortal. And our belief and our faith and our respect for those elements, our philosophy, in a way, can be said to render us immortal. Of course, Masonic Effects isn't a comfortable place for people with a literal sense of the world, because we embrace the myths and the metaphors and allegories of Freemasonry and explore them in as much depth as we possibly can for their meaning. Today, I want to talk about add to the sense of our roots by talking about a man that I think is enormously misplaced. I think he was born out of his time and in a country that obviously proves that he was captured and taken away from the land of his birth. See if you can tell. He was born in the 31st of May in 1819. This is what you shall do. Love the earth and sun and the animals. Despise riches. Give alms to everyone that asks. Stand up for the stupid and crazy. Devote your income and labor to others. Hate tyrants. Argue not concerning God. Have patience and indulgence toward the people. Take off your hat to nothing known. Do I contradict myself, he said. Very well, then, I contradict myself. I am large and I contain multitudes. And your very flesh shall be a great poem. Be curious, not judgmental. Walter Whitman, a poet, an essayist, a journalist, a humanist. He's part of the transition between transcendentalism and realism. And we can see that in the material that he left us. So we're going to be talking about that a bit more today. He was I don't know, would you say that he was an odd fellow? At a time when being an essayist was revered, recognized. I think so. I think he's left his mark. His work was very controversial in its time, particularly his poetry collection called Leaves of Grass, which is described as obscene for its overt sexuality. Well, of course, we're going to just take a look at that this morning, this afternoon, and this evening. Anybody that would say that, you know, look at the judgments. Here's a fellow that's talking about being curious. We'll take a look at the Leaves of Grass and see what the big scandal was about. Nothing vulgar. But he rewrote, you know, he rewrote the darn thing a number of times, which is not unheard of in the day. I sing the Body Electric. There's all kinds of beautiful versions of this, but we'll get back into that. I've noticed that it's the 18th of December. This is the 353rd day of the year. It leaves us 13 days left. Ha! 2 days and 22 hours until the rebirth, to winter, this winter solstice. And with winter, here we see, we bear witness to the process of renewal. The end of one season and the beginning of the next. Always the beginning, never the end, always the next. And so if there's any part of the, if you believe in that sense that there's some knowledge and some history that follows us genetically, that our babies are born with a certain amount of knowledge that we can't really measure yet, if you believe that little children have developed vocabularies before they have the capacity to speak, they have a brain, then bear witness. We're going to talk today about something that began as an intellectual pursuit in the laboratories and the parlors and libraries and gentlemen's rooms. And spilled out into the marketplace. And oh my goodness, we have a compelling commentary today. Here, a little something Canadian, just a little something, just to help us all. Oh, there's a little something that will help us get the Christmas, recapture the Christmas spirit here. This is called Bonjour Noël. It's beautiful.
Bonjour Noël, voici que dans les rues, la neige est revenue, comme un châtiment tout blanc. Bonjour Noël. Bonjour, belle vitrine, qui le soir s'illumine pour la joie des passants. Les petits nez s'écrasent pour mieux les admirer, et les yeux pleins d'extase sont tout émerveillés. Bonjour, Noël, chacun fait sa demande, toutes les mains se tendent vers les sonnez clochette, c'est aujourd'hui la fête, la terre et du ciel. Petit Noël, j'ai vu des tas de choses, pardonnez-moi si j'ose vous demander tout ça. Un long tunnel pour mon train mécanique, une boîte à musique, une poupée pour moi. Ils mettent mes galops près de la cheminée. Au loin les cloches sonnent, il est minuit passé. Bonjour, Noël, dormez chers petits anges, soyez lâches en échange, vous serez exaucés. Bonjour, Noël, sonnez, sonnez clochettes, c'est aujourd'hui la fête de la terre et du ciel. Joyeux Noël, bravo, j'ai ma toupie, moi ma poupée chérie, et moi mes martinets. Joyeux Noël, dans l'arbre qui scintille, toutes les bougies brillent, quelle belle journée. Dansons, dansons la ronde autour du grand sapin. Et dans le vaste monde, c'est le même refrain. Noël, Noël, c'est la joie sur la terre, c'est les cœurs qui espèrent du bonheur pour chacun. Bonjour, Noël, sonnez, sonnez clochette, c'est aujourd'hui la fête de la terre et du ciel.
I think that works. I think that works nicely. Ah, and now to the commentary today. Let's wrap up 2016 by claiming our audacious nature, reclaiming it. It wasn't magic that gave root to masonry. Rigid middle-class structures proved more malleable than first thought. In fact, we discovered there could be symbiosis. So join us today to discuss a proposition that the vehicle that carried masonry along related to the development and decline of the compromise class, or what I call the compromise class, the middle class. Now think of it this. The history. The image of the 19th century is a period of opportunity for men of energy and skills, one that's been long recognized. But in the past, historians have argued that an industrious middle class made great fortunes in the early days of the Industrial Revolution and then converted economic success into political power in the 1832 Reform Act. Dry, 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 dry. The political power that was then used to ensure policy reflected the middle class interests. And arguments present that the middle class, as a coherent body mobilizing their economic and political power, forged society in their image. And in challenging landed privilege and aristocratic corruption, it was an industrial and urban middle class that can be seen as striving to establish a society based on merit rather than on one's birth. Through educational reform, schemes of civic improvement, and the growth of the market, the Victorian middle class saw themselves as facilitating equality of opportunity by enabling the working classes to realize their abilities. These reforms mean that today we live in an open society in which we all have the potential to become middle class, doesn't it? For some of us, and for many of us, that opportunity is more equal for some than for others. And certainly research has shown that if you're born with people, the connections are necessary. And that those that have more connections earlier on do better, do well. It's sort of like the math. It's harder to start with nothing. Not impossible, but harder. And promoting this as some type of dream state is just that. It's a dream. Reality is a little tougher, a little more unforgiving. The Victorian middle class is largely associated with the growth of cities and the expansion of the economy. Now, the term was used from around the middle 18th century, 1700s, to describe those people below the aristocracy but above the workers. As a social category, the middling sort always referred to a broad band of the population. But this diversity increased in the 19th century. Alongside the businessmen associated with the growth of manufacturing, the period saw increased numbers of small entrepreneurs, shopkeepers and merchants who undertook to transport and retail the fruits of history and industry and empire. The increased scale of industry and overseas trade, together with the expansion of empire, fueled the proliferation of commerce and finance, such as banks and insurance companies, shipping and railways. And Masonic Effects have talked about that. We've talked about the growth of through the social phenomena of coffee houses and what was going on in those coffee houses in the day. It was this business. The system needed administering by clerks and managers and salary professionals. The expansion of cities, towns, and the economy produced new spaces that needed regulating and running. The Victorian period witnessed a massive expansion of local government and the centralized state, providing occupations for a vast strata of civil servants, teachers, doctors, lawyers, and government officials, as well as clerks and assistants that helped these institutions and services to operate. Such diversity makes a satisfactory definition of the middle class impossible. There's no clear relationship to the means of production. Although there were some individuals that accumulated spectacular wealth in the 19th century through entrepreneurial activity, there were many more businessmen who scraped a living and many who worked for wages as public servants, managers, and clerks. The economic boundary of the middle class wasn't clear. Some members of the middle class used their wealth to buy land and stately homes, becoming as rich, if not richer, than the aristocracy. At the same time, many members of the skilled working class could earn as much, if not more, than some members of the lower middle class. I'll read that again, eh? At the same time, many members of the skilled working class could earn as much, if not more, than some members of the lower middle class. It's like saying class structure still exists. It's like the daftness of somebody saying there's no politics within our order, because we can't even say that with a clear eye. All that you usually back that up with is sort of a sour temperament, don't you think? Where is this politics? But the idea of social mobility, being able to advance, was and still is central to legitimizing the idea of a market economy. And of course, that's going to get into an unsettled conversation within your own thinking, I'm pretty sure, that we also have the advance of education, which is a bit unsettling, because formerly it was the aristocracy and upper middle class that were well educated. They could afford it. The aristocracy being the clergy, lawyers, doctors, wealthy people, aristocrats that were privately tutored. But along came this opportunity through education. We know that, brethren, as the common good, creating a society based on merit, we were keen to discover the talent that was out there, whether they were dressed in shabby clothing or not. What was the talent? What was the next rear wearer? Was the next researcher? And some of our failings include gender bias. Well, we weren't looking for the genius that was within that whole cohort of women that were around us constantly. Not until fairly recently, And yeah, we own that one. It was ridiculous. Ridiculous. But it made, of course, the usual canard is to say it made sense. It was part of the values of the day. It was ridiculous. Absolutely ridiculous. That a man could turn his back on genius at any point and be okay with that. Ugh. But the middle class has been relatively successful, and now we say today that it is under threat, that it's shrinking. But it was the source of social mobility, and still is. And it's central to legitimizing the idea of a market economy. And it was not without its critics. You've heard here, we've talked about the work of Thomas Carlyle. And he was concerned that the community was threatened by the aggressive individualism of some of the frustrated aspirations of, you know, just go at it, become aggressive, you know, stay up 20 hours a day. Everything is about money, 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 power, 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 getting ahead. A sense of social order was formulated in the mixing of political economy, paternalism, and evangelical religion. And it describes specific roles to groups of people, didn't it? Talk to our Irish brethren if you want to know about how what they were told was their lot in life. And thank goodness and God bless them that they didn't accept it. Whilst women's work, either for wages or to ensure the success of the family business, might be essential, the idealized wife and mother was prescribed the responsibility of cultivating morality and spirituality in the home as a corrective to the worst excesses of competitive industry. Today, 2016, we still pay women less for work, equal work. We're not that smart. These perspectives were popularized in books and self-help, particularly something by a fellow named Samuel Smiles, 59. He argued, he wasn't the only one, but he argued that individuals were responsible for their own future. Ah, the capitalist mentality. Every person for themselves. If you need health care, you pay for it, or you don't get it and you die. Harsh reality. It's all a political construct. It's not, and nothing to do with nature. Not when you consider that we are the types of creatures that care for one another. And that it is demonstrated to a lot of us, and a belief, that by education, by providing education, that our culture advances. That providing health care to our elderly and to all of us does not break the bank. It's a way of defining who we are as people. Holy mackerel, there we go again. Again with those Masonic notions. But part of the middle class notion. And as we're going through this, I want you to pull out what you think are elements or threads that have been reflected in your Masonic teachings. Here, just for a second, we'll talk about self-reliance. And we hear these themes in ritual consistently. Most middle-class Victorians acknowledged that the environment had an influence on men's behavior. And the rise of the middle classes in the Victorian period is much to do with the recognition of the promotion of political economy. Improvement was a key part of middle class culture. Now, this is a time when the men in power were able to tolerate abject, utter, disgraceful levels of poverty. Disgraceful, inhumane. And the genius, some genius came up with the notion of the poorhouses. Then there was reform. The new poor law did that. But that was a result of education of women. having access to people that could make policy and having a connection with making a connection with their beliefs. Most significantly, there was a local voluntary society, such as the Mechanics Institute and Intemperance Societies, that promoted the improvement across class communication. Personal narratives of success were an important part of this culture. Individualized narratives of great men building fortunes from nothing became a staple part of Victorian middle-class culture. However, they need to be read with a certain skepticism. A close reading of these stories often reveals that personal contacts and supportive connections were important in establishing a business or in gaining entry to a profession. Having access to networks of support in the Manchester business community was central to the success of the engineering and industrialist James Naismith. Naismith gained legal advice, credit, and customers through a network of professionals and businessmen in the area. And like many successful Victorian businessmen, Naismith was introduced to these networks through his family relations and family friends. Consider yourself part of that group. In many such professions, promotion up the ranks was structured into the job. But even here, personal contact was a crucial element. White-collar workers were largely recruited from within the ranks of the middle classes. Many of these posts were very poorly paid and quite uncertain. The uncertain status grew toward the end of the century, where they became associated with women's work. If we can do anything pejorative, we disgrace ourselves by referring to things as women's work. Thrift and responsibility and self-reliance were important aspects of Victorian middle-class culture. These middle-class virtues could be used to define a society in which success was contingent on individual perseverance and energy. Repeated application. Isn't that something about polishing a stone, a work? In practice, middle-class society was not as open as the rhetoric implied. Before start, the categories of class were uncertain and shifting, and the relationship between affluence and attitude was certainly not clear to contemporaries. Middle-class values carried out in these attempts to define a society based on merit rather than aristocratic privilege. However, the importance of cultural capital and social networks to success of the period implies that the rise of the middle class in the Victorian period saw the replacement of one set of privileges with another. The vast expansion of the service sector in the 20th century perhaps did more than social reform and voluntary association to swell the ranks of the middle classes in the 20th century. Oh dear.
Christmas time is here.
Well, I have to fix that cough.
Happiness and cheer. Fun for all the children call their favorite time of year. Snowflakes in the air. Of love and dreams to share. sleigh bells in the air. Beauty everywhere. Yuletide by the fireside and joyful memories. Christmas time is here. Families growing near. Oh, that we could always see such spirit through the
better than that, gentlemen. Just doesn't. Masonry's not going to die. We're doing all right. We're progressing. The ideas, values, not necessarily us. We're in a period of reclaiming our ground for ourselves. It's hard to face, but I think it's realistic that to understand that masonry isn't magic, but that we seem very soft. We don't have strict adherence to study. Our scholarship is enormously flexible. It is opportunity for education without the expectation. The man brings that expectation and his motivation to take advantage, to take full advantage, very, I think, paralleling the middle class understanding that individual merit is the basis for progress, not your birthright. And in lodges, we see a bit of a collision of that, where we see pins and recognitions for, and it's almost as if they're all hail. The families where grandsons and great-grandsons and sons somehow are given a status within, that's a Masonic class structure. And yeah, it does fly in the face of our notion that we're all equal in Lodge. Well, what we're saying is some are more equal than others because our ancestors have been around. And so we almost claim a territory. Almost claim a sense of ownership. I'm not here to argue the merits of that type of thing. I'm simply saying it is what it is. And I don't think that's necessarily healthy unless we get it out there and make sure that we don't haven't created our own petit bourgeois, the notion of a certain group of people that have the responsibility for the movement of the order and the protection of the order. That, I think, would be a failing of our essential values. Our standards are very flexible. So it's hard for me to accept that we're going to continue for another 200 years with this kind of softness, intellectual, moral, and historical softness. Very few people that wear an apron can discuss the ritual, or they compare, do a comparative, or have a comparative understanding of different forms of ritual, let alone have an interest in the various points of history. It's great and enriched history, as you and I know. But truth be known, that's a minority. And the question really is, it's sometimes it's painful to watch really talented and brilliant men struggling to answer the question. Like, it's not that question about, is that all there is? You know, the stuff that happened after we began writing the ritual down. Well, if it's written down, that must be the way it always is. And everybody's a Rhodes Scholar of Masonry. Hmm? Everyone has a seat in reading Masonic history at Oxford. Hmm? Hmm? I'm talking about the more mature aspect of our thinking. How can this float along? How can this float along as a pastiche of something that was, that our history tells us and teaches us was enormously innovative? Was on the edge of political and economic and intellectual and theological reform. This intrusion of science into the control of the church, evidence-based life, improvement, advancement based on merit. Not when the aristocracy are not going to give up control. Governments and people in control do not give it up. Their power is taken from them because the power is intoxicating. If you want an example of that illustrates this lesson, the challenge this type of belief, and watch what happens. We have a pope right now, Francis, a Jesuit. There's a clarity to the actions. No, I'm not going to get into this in much depth. More than to say, it's there. So, can we exist for another 200 years when the things around us that have permeated that structure have been, what's the word, clear, with control, with attention to outcomes? Now, we can slide into an envelope here that we're more of a religion than we are of a social order. And so can religion come and go? The basis of it come and go? Well, no. The faith is what it is. It's in context. Oh, and there will always be loutish people that will take something out of context and make it and mock it as if that's how you promote your own faith. It's all the aggressiveness of religions. Eh? My dad's bigger than your dad. Masonry with the softness, is that what it takes? Well, is a metaphor good enough to make this last? Our order around us, as we know it, is crumbling here in this country. And that's simply because the buildings were temporary. They weren't built for longevity. They weren't built as monuments to us and by us. They were make do. Now, where I am, we're just evolving out of that make do to a more substantive frame of mind. Recognizing that we have the potential to contribute to something permanent and lasting. That's not to say rigid and inflexible. We won't get there if we have that idea. So we're watching the death throes of that idea right now. And it's taken a decade. Oh, we've always done it this way. Do you remember hearing that kind of conversation? Yeah, those are the death that's the death rattle of that outdated way of thinking. I playfully call that the Luddite, the Masonic Luddite. Innovation was the heart and blood of our organization, and it continues to this day. But our scholarship, it is what it is. It's insufficient. So to move us forward, we cannot rely on the performance of the membership as it now stands. The acts that we perform, I challenge, are tending to be more self-serving than... And the historians amongst us will need to help me with that. I mean, now we're not thinking about community. We're thinking about a Masonic community. And me, I'm as guilty as the rest. Because I challenge that I don't see us caring about our membership, even peripherally, to start to house our old boys in an affordable nursing home or long-term care facility, where they can be part of the Masonic community until the end of days for them. Or they can be part of us. We don't seem to be that concerned here in this part of the Masonic universe. Not yet. We'll get there. And we have the odd sample or example of that, but that's all it is. We could even refer to that as a token gesture. It doesn't, they're not, certainly those efforts aren't defining. The safety of the Masonic Order is the sense of individuality within the lodges. The lodges function as individuals, so that's the, so we don't have the symmetry of one type of forest, one type of tree in the forest. If we have one type of tree, then one type of tree disease wipes out the entire forest. But we have those mixed forests. At least we did while we struggled to create sort of that paramilitary symmetry, everybody doing the same thing at the same time, so that it clarifies expectations. That's if you are translating and interpreting the rules of engagement in a particular way, simplistic, oversimplistic way, that I think is inconsistent with the history. I don't think our order will exist if we are starting to look for that construction of a monolith. I don't think it will exist. I think what we will require is the flexibility of the individual. And the ideas will continue to grow. Having our leaders in, we put an unfair demand on our leadership when they're given insufficient time to implement their ideas. Now, what's the sufficient amount of time? Not what we have now. But these are men of considerable effort, and I think we need to be able to listen to them and help to implement their ideas, and help to see those ideas through to fruition. So we take the panic, that breath-holding notion that we only have a certain number of, you know, we have to come up with short-term solutions. Well, that's what we're developing, gentlemen, short-term solutions to long-term issues. And is it working for you? The respect for the order will be there. Our numbers will continue to decline. That's just part of the evolution of the order. To validate what we're doing means we need to be able to shift our thinking. Well, inherent to Freemasonry may not be the popular belief. Certainly it's going to challenge the death rattle. You know, oh, there goes a whole way of something beautiful. Well, that tree, I planted that tree, it grew, and it grew to an old age, and I had to cut it down because it was past its life expectancy. And I don't whine. I mean, it's beneath us to whine and complain there, boys. I like the shade of the tree while it grew. It was beautiful. And now I have, and you and I have beautiful and remarkable memories, if we're not so dour and pouty about it. We're contributing to make ourselves happy in this situation. So we should continue to do that. Move toward the things that make sense and leave the things that don't. But one thing you can be sure about is masonry does not move in baby steps. Does not move in baby steps. It moves in large resonating waves. It's like that pulse of gravity that was just discovered. That's masonry. It resonates through a man, resonates through your heart. Can I talk a little bit about some of the stuff that Walt Whitman said that might help to focus our thinking just a little bit? After you have exhausted what there is in business and politics and conviviality and so on, have found that none of these finally satisfy or permanently wear, what remains? Nature remains. I say that democracy can never prove itself beyond a cavil until it founds and luxuriantly grows its own forms of art and poems and schools and theology, displacing all that exists or that has been produced anywhere in the past under opposite influences. I have learned that to be with those I like is enough. And brethren, re-examine all that you have been told and dismiss that which insults your soul. Now I see the secret of making the best person. It is to grow in the open air and to eat and sleep with the earth. Stranger, if you passing meet me and desire to speak to me, why should you not speak to me and why should I not speak to you? Have you learned the lessons only of those who admired you and were tender to you and stood aside for you? Have you not learned great lessons from those who braced themselves against you and disputed passage with you? Keep your face towards the sunshine and the shadows will fall behind you. Nice little simplistic. I'm as bad as the worst, but thank God I'm as good as the best. Every moment of light and dark is a miracle. So we have work to do, gentlemen. Yeah. It's absolutely all right. Little Vince Guaraldi. Yeah. A little bit of nostalgia, too, for all of us who grew up with Charlie Brown Christmas cartoons. Yeah, gentlemen, masonry may not be the problem, but masonry doesn't exist in a vacuum. Come on, take heart. This is a strong ship. We've waded through some pretty serious storms in the past. Pretty serious storms. Some of them today we can mock ourselves, and we do. You'll still hear some, you know, thoughtless wag talking about goats. Honestly, they don't know how much of an insult this is to masonry, and they'll make jokes about it. The serious-minded among us know a little better than that. But the rich today are getting richer. We've got some problems. How are we it's about the redistribution of wealth. There's the number of poor people is disgraceful. The small number of oligarchs, the wealthy, is an obscenity. People hungry, destitute, and others that are taking advantage. Where do you think that wealth comes from? Based on the exploitation of somebody else. So the question to us today is, can we tolerate this any longer? Well, if ever the Masonic values of the common good were needed, it's today. Yeah, your values are needed. But gentlemen, we have to get our act together. If you're going you're going rogue and you're buying into what's going on around us. You know, I've got mine and that's the way it is. Well, good luck to you. But there's something happening. Pay attention. The poorer are getting not only poorer, but with that comes alienation. And with that comes instability. Oh, we listened to a few sound bites talking about, you know, electoral reform. Well, that disillusionment with the established class we've seen played out in real terms in one of the major economic forces of the 20th century. It happened. We don't seem to be yet ready to or prepared to pay attention to that because it's really quite daunting. The rich are getting richer. Well, as the poor get poorer, the middle class seems to be shrinking. Upper middle class, we know, isn't. You know, it's being redefined. But the things that you and I aspired to when we were young, our children will not be able to achieve. Fewer of them will have the ability to own a home. Most of us in the future will be renters. Whether they own their own vehicles, another question. This notion of being able to retire, remember Freedom 55? Now we see a lot of our retired friends outliving their pensions, going back to work because they're finding out, they know the science has been there for a long time, that being actively engaged is healthier. It's better for your brain. It challenges. And we see that with a lot of our boys that are absolutely busy after retirement with things Masonic. They have the time for it. Let's not lose track. Are we creating an atmosphere for retired people? Well, I for one am saying, yeah, we have. And is it welcoming of a young fellow with a young family and the demands? No, no. We're not listening to that guy. Come on. We don't want to listen to him. And he's too proud to be able to start to talk to us about how much economic and social pressure he's under. Come on. So we wring our hands, and I think we've stopped mocking the membership and saying they don't care. Like it's a we and they. Oh, yes, I know. I've actually heard people talk like that. We're all in this together. The need for us and our values has never been sharper and keener, at least in my mind. And I hope you share that belief. How you get there? Be gentle with yourself. Be thoughtful with yourself. Pay attention to your common sense. If you find that you're thinking emotionally and all you can come up with is dire aspects, you know, then do this. Stay away from the men who will only shake your hand when they are trying to get something from you. Stay away from them. And turn toward the people that have some degree of authenticity in their life. Turn toward them. The ridiculous person, well, they're there for a purpose that we may not always see. Well, we have to go now. This has been just great. But I hope it gives you a little bit of something to think about. I think there's some distinct parallels between the development of Freemasonry after the idea was formed and the progress of the middle class. Now the middle class is it's not under attack, it's transforming. There's nothing there to attack. It's like attacking an idea. This is economics. Oh, the soft social science. Oh my God, do we have those people that are thinking that there's hard sciences and the sciences and the rest don't matter? Really? Well, then ask yourself, why is philosophy the first science? Ah, here's a little say goodbye, Dale. The next time we're together is going to be on Christmas Day. I have only good wishes to you and your loved ones. Some men look up at the stars and see those lights and doesn't strike them as at all peculiar. Other men look at those lights and wonder why and how. But you, brethren, you're men that travel amongst those lights and with the light. See you next time.
Chestnuts roasting on an open fire, Jack Frost nipping at your nose, Yuletide carols being sung by a choir, and folks dressed up like Eskimos. Everybody knows a turkey and some mistletoe help to make the season bright. Tiny tots with their eyes all aglow will find it hard to sleep tonight. They know that sad on his way, he's loaded. lots of toys and goodies on a sleigh. And every mother's child is gonna spy to see if reindeer really know how to fly. And so I'm offering this simple phrase to kids from 1 to 92. Although it's been said many times, many ways, Merry Christmas to you. Many ways, Merry Christmas to you.